From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Everybody says they've never seen a presidential campaign like the one we're in right now. So tawdry, so crazy, so over the top. Blood coming out of wherever. Don't let the kids watch. Where are the issues in the midst of the taunts and fisticuffs? Did the media make this happen? Help. President Obama suggested as much this week. This hour On Point, the media's role in the 2016 campaign circus. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did the media make Donald Trump feast on the frenzy, black out Bernie, ignore the issues, or just deal with a wild year? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Longtime TV newsman Jeff Greenfield joins us in a moment. But first, two of our great panel today. With us from Washington is Hadass Gold, media reporter for Politico, which has been in the thick of all this. Hadass Gold, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hey, Tom. Great to be with you.
From New York, Brian Stelter is with us, senior media correspondent now for CNN, host of CNN's Reliable Sources. Brian Stelter, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
You open, Hadass, one of your recent pieces with this clip, talking about this clip. This is Jake Tapper sitting down with Trump advisor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. This is on CNN, of course. Says he'd like to be talking about real issues, but there's other stuff out there.
I would love to be talking about trade and immigration and counterterrorism, but unfortunately, I now have to turn to another question, which has to do with the fact that your campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, now faces legal charges. There's surveillance video showing that Mr. Lewandowski did indeed grab the arm of Michelle Fields.
And there you go. Within seconds, you go from like to talk about issues. No, we're going to talk about an assault, a misdemeanor, whatever it was. Bernie Sanders complaining yesterday on Rachel Maddow's show, MSNBC.
Because media is what media is today, any stupid, absurd remark made by Donald Trump becomes the story of the week. Maybe, just maybe, we might want to have a serious discussion about the serious issues facing America. Donald Trump will not look quite so interesting in that context.
And here's the president on Monday.
Without a press that asks tough questions, voters take them at their word. When people put their faith in someone who can't possibly deliver on his or her promises, that only breeds more cynicism.
Hadass Gold, what about it? Is the media MIA in asking the tough questions? Is it actually complicit in helping create this enormous, what do you call it, circus zoo we've got this year?
I think this is a kind of a chicken and the egg question that everybody's been trying to answer, whether the media created Trump or if the media is just reacting to the people who like him. I mean, Trump is nothing new. That's one thing we have to remember. Trump has been around and has been in the public sphere for a very long time.
He hasn't been lined up for a seat in the White House.
He hasn't been lined up for a sweet seat in the White House in a while, but people know he has one of the highest name recognitions mm-hmm. anybody's ever seen. But I don't think that the media necessarily created him or anything like that. I think it's a kind of a symbiotic relationship where we need him, he needs us. But I would contend that there has been tough reporting on Donald Trump, and we've seen that in the debates. I mean, think about the Fox News debate where as he was trying to explain, you know, his policies and how he was going to pay for things, they immediately put on the screen a simple equation that showed that it just wasn't possible. But here's the thing, in media, you know, we rely on ratings and clicks, and that's kind of what pays our bills. And the stuff that Trump is doing, and he knows that, attracts a lot of that just because it's so outrageous that a leading presidential candidate is doing these things.
Brian, the president said, suggested that same thing. The media is in trouble financially. Here's a surefire ratings maker, and the media can't resist it, that somehow they have become complicit with the Trump campaign. The New York Times calculated that they've given almost $2 billion in free exposure to Donald Trump.
Barack Obama, of course, someone who's also benefited from the same phenomenon, yes. Someone who was portrayed as a celebrity and indeed was a celebrity-like figure yeah. in 2008 as he was running for president. Yeah. He benefited from many of the same factors Trump is benefiting from. For example, the live broadcast of his events, of his rallies, of his speeches on cable news. It is different now in some ways, partly because there is more anxiety in the media industry. There is more of a focus on page views, on traffic. But there's always been a media bias towards spectacle. And I think that, more than anything else, is what Trump is tapping into. He creates spectacle. He is a very, very wise producer. And in many ways, he's a television producer, kind of producing his own campaign day by day.
Brian Stelter, please stand by there in New York, and Hadass Gold in Washington. With us now from Santa Barbara, California, Jeff Greenfield, longtime television newsman, contributing correspondent to the PBS NewsHour, to the Daily Beast, Politico. You've seen him for decades on CBS, ABC, CNN. Jeff Greenfield, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
You've seen a lot of presidential campaigns. Have you ever seen one with the scale of spectacle we've seen in this one? And is it the media's fault? What's the media role here?
Well, I didn't cover Andrew Jackson's campaign in 1828.
Right.
They used a lot of symbolism. But the short answer to your question is no. And I think there are a lot of reasons. I don't have a unified field theory.
Okay.
But I think Hadass's point was often overlooked. When Donald Trump announced for president, he was by far the best-known non-incumbent to run, probably since Eisenhower. And so there was a connection with his audience built in more recent years from The Apprentice of a decisive, commanding figure. That, in turn, meant that whenever he showed up, people turned on. And one thing I think you can fault the media for, at least the cable news part of this, is that they bent an awful lot of rules to make sure he would come on their show. You want to call in on a phone instead of showing up, that's fine. You put on a rally, we'll cover the whole thing. Something that C-SPAN does for all candidates, but where there were special accommodations. The other part about this is that because Trump breaks every rule that people like me thought we understood about politics, the sheer "what in heaven's name is going on" factor also produced coverage, sometimes, by the way, very critical. And it continues to this day, Tom. This morning's New York Times has three op-ed pieces of four on Donald Trump, all of which are critical, but they're about Donald Trump.
I mean, we had Les Moonves, CEO of CBS, Brian, saying, in the last week or two, he said, I was talking, I think, with other television executives, and I think, looking at all the ratings and viewership this has brought, saying, it's a terrible thing to say, this is the head of CBS, but bring it on, Donald, keep going.
And to be fair to Les Moonves, he was talking mostly about advertising revenue there. I've interviewed him about this. He said this in prior elections as well. CBS and other big TV station owners benefit enormously from campaign ad spending. But he is hitting on a broader point as well, which is that Donald Trump has created a more lively election, a more dramatic election. The stakes are higher as a result. More people are paying attention as a result. We see that in the ratings for all the debates and town halls. Fundamentally, Trump has created a more unpredictable story, and his events are the most unpredictable events, which is why the cameras are trained on him when he's speaking. I think if we were to say, did the media make Trump? In a way, if you go back to the 80s and the tabloids in New York, yes. Early on, yes. You know, Trump has always taken advantage of the press and known how to get his name in the papers in a very literal way. So did the media make Trump? Well, maybe they did in the 80s, in the tabloids, in the 90s here in New York, and then in the 2000s on The Apprentice. All along, there's been a symbiotic relationship. But I think Jeff is right. There's also been this contentious relationship with a lot of negative coverage. So ultimately, I would ask, what are the voters paying attention to? What are Trump supporters reading and listening and watching?
Right.
Is it that they don't hear the critiques? Is it that they don't care about the critiques? I think that's where I'm most interested, actually, at this point, is what are they consuming and what are they not consuming? Has a media environment been created where the average Trump fan or Trump believer is isolated from the criticism of Trump, or do they just dismiss it?
I mean, eyeballs and ears are all over the place. There's no question about that now. So, Hadass, when the president says it's the media's job to get in there, when unworkable plans are put out, to get in there, jump all over them, show that they wouldn't work, and, you know, sort of enlighten the public so we can go forward as a great republic, has the media failed to do that in spite of the kind of intense coverage? Have they failed to ask the critical question at the critical moment when eyes and ears are there, Hadass? Could they have sort of dismantled, apply this to all the candidates? Are they asleep at the switch?
perhaps at the beginning, the media didn't apply such a critical eye to Trump's ideas and policies because in the beginning, we all considered him a publicity stunt. I mean, I distinctly remember a point over the summer when I feel as though all the media kind of got together. And, you know, we also had this discussion in our newsroom and said, listen, this guy is for real. This is a serious candidacy. We need to start treating it seriously. And the media did start to do that. And I think that we have in the media, you know, speaking as a we, trained a critical eye on him and on his policies, but they don't get the same type of attention because it's not as sexy to talk about how his plans for healthcare don't necessarily add up and won't actually save that much money, as opposed to his, you know, the crazy allegations he's making about Megyn Kelly or about Heidi Cruz. But we've been doing so much fact checking about him. I mean, every fact checking organization has spent a lot of time focusing on him. Politico, we dedicated a team to, I think, spend a full week listening to every single word he said. And I believe they found that about every 5 minutes, there was a misstatement or a lie in everything he has ever said in 1 week period of time. So we have paid attention to that types of things. But just like in any situation, the policy, you know, getting into the weeds about numbers and things like that, it's harder for people to understand, harder for people to click on, you know, they won't watch it as much. But I think we are starting to see much more serious questions about his policies. I mean, just yesterday when it came to the abortion question, that's very serious. And Chris Matthews on MSNBC, you know, really pressed him hard to expand on that. And then we saw what happened. It was almost like an explosion. And then within a couple hours, Donald Trump was walking it back. So we have seen people really press him critically on these issues, especially in the last few months.
Here's the president Monday night asking.
It's worth asking ourselves what each of us, as politicians or journalists, but most of all as citizens, may have done to contribute to this atmosphere in our politics. I was going to call it carnival atmosphere, but that implies fun.
We're looking at the media piece of that this hour, a campaign season like no others, in living memory. And we have seen a lot of wild campaign seasons. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the media's role in the 2016 presidential campaign circus, where the news media is getting it right, where we are getting it wrong on Trump, Sanders, name-calling, fisticuffs, craziness like maybe we've never seen before. How do you see the media doing this year? Great, best they could under the circumstances, weird circumstances, lousy. Has this just been a circus the media had no choice but to cover? Has the media helped make the circus? Pump it up for thrills, for ratings. Pedas Gold is with us from Politico, Brian Stelter from CNN, Jeff Greenfield is with us, you know, from PBS NewsHour, and much more widely. There was this moment, weeks ago now, when we had John Harwood and CNBC debate for the Republicans. First question, right out of the gate, went about the comic book campaign.
Mr. Trump.
Yes.
You've done very well in this campaign so far by promising to build a wall and make another country pay for it.
Right.
Send 11 million people out of the country. Cut taxes $10 trillion without increasing the deficit.
Right.
And make Americans better off because your greatness would replace the stupidity and incompetence of others.
That's right.
Let's be honest. Is this a comic book version of a presidential campaign?
It's not a comic book. And it's not a very nicely asked question the way you say that.
He took a lot of heat for that, Brian Stelter.
Yes.
At the time, people were like, what the heck? What kind of question is that? Is that just too broad? What about it?
If you pulled John Harwood aside at a party today and you talked to him about this, he would say, I was right, and all the people who attacked me for that question have been proven wrong. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, right? Among a wide swath of the country, this is a comic book version of a campaign. However, there is very much a sort of two Americas vibe to what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's because Trump speaks in an us versus them language. But it is almost as if there are two realities to this campaign. And there is one reality you can subscribe to if you are not a Trump supporter. And there is an entirely different reality you can subscribe to if you are a Trump supporter. And I'll give an example. The Michelle Fields, Corey Lewandowski controversy, the story of the past few days and few weeks.
This is the Breitbart reporter that grabbed the videos out there showing it, misdemeanor charges of assault or battery now.
And the police have weighed in now, right?
Yes,
the police
have
weighed in. They have said there's probable cause here. However, for the Trump supporters, there's an entire alternate reality that's been created where she was actually going to accost him and that Corey Lewandowski was protecting her from protecting the candidate from her, and that she was in the wrong and that she was a hoaxer and that she was an attention seeker. And it seems to me that partly through the rise of conservative media outlets on the web and partly through the rise of social networking outlets like Twitter and Facebook, where people can share inaccurate memes, there's this creation of a bubble. We talk about this bubble being on the left and on the right, but right now it's very visible on the right among people that only want to believe positive news for Donald Trump.
Jeff Greenfield, is there no such thing as truth anymore? I mean, is the media giving up on that? If Trump puts out a different interpretation, but the video's right there, can't we have truth?
We can, but I think the key to this is that for a substantial cohort of Trump supporters, it doesn't matter what the media are telling them. That they have, and this is a failure not just of the media, but for the broader political institutions. There are people so disaffected and so disconnected that the normal assumptions, the media, the press is supposed to produce the truth, and then the people can make an informed decision. It has been broken. I mean, part of this has been going on for a very long time as the gatekeepers, or more precisely, the gates have disappeared. The incredible variety of ways that information or misinformation flows to people has thrown the most fundamental assumption about how a democratic society works into doubt. And I think for a cohort that disbelieves not just the media, they don't believe their financial institutions, they don't believe their political leaders or sensible political leaders, they have good reason to feel that they have been treated very badly over the past couple of decades. And so it's kind of a natural evolution that when these distrusted institutions tell them Donald Trump is lying, he's ignorant, he's a bully, he makes stuff up, he's a fabulous, they go, I don't believe you. I think there are plenty of Trump people who believe that when he said thousands of Muslims in Jersey cheered the fall of the towers in New York, And the response was, there were no such tapes. Their response is, you must have burned them. You deliberately lost them because you don't want to make our guy look bad.
Yeah.
And that has issues that are going to be with us way after this campaign.
I mean, here was
and
Trump.
Some Obama aides have said to me that's...
Go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, some Obama aides have said to me this is Fox News' fault, that this is conservative media's fault, and Fox News in particular, because Fox is such a powerful megaphone. And it seemed to me that's why the president was so eager to give the speech you're playing the clips from this week. He was so eager to speak at length about the press. It was almost a giant subtweet of the entire Trump campaign and of coverage of the campaign.
By the way, Tom, just we have to get this on the record.
Yep.
It comes with ill grace for Obama to praise the truth-telling investigative role of the press when his administration, according to an awful lot of news people, has been more aggressive in trying to silence leaks and go after whistleblowers than any administration since Nixon's.
Exactly.
That is true and very fair. But here he was saying you've got to keep media saying what's true. Here's the president Monday.
If I say that the world is round and someone else says it's flat, that's worth reporting, but you might also want to report on a bunch of scientific evidence that seems to support the notion that the world is round. And that shouldn't be buried in paragraph 5 or 6 of the article.
But you've got people out there who are willing to just say, well, the way they see it, maybe video be damned. This was Donald Trump asked about the allegations that his campaign manager had grabbed the Breitbart News reporter Michelle Fields after a press event. The assault, of course, was caught on tape. But here's Trump. This was earlier this month.
Nothing happened. This was, in my opinion, made up. No, I didn't see anything. All of a sudden, we heard about it later on. But the Secret Service said nothing happened.
He said, she said, who knows? Megan is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Megan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As usual, Obama is the only adult in the room right now. I think the media is entirely complicit. A most recent example, CNN's Republican town hall the other night. My husband and I are both liberals. We watched all 3 hours of the event and were completely dismayed at CNN's coverage afterwards. All the panelists could talk about were the sensational aspects of the evening and what's current. Not once did Kasich get any play afterwards. The story of that evening was Kasich's phenomenal display. I mean, he was clearly, if I were a Republican, that's who I would be looking into. He never gets any play. As you pointed out, he's buried. No one wants to talk about him. They didn't even mention how well he did. They didn't even mention that who won the evening. All they wanted to talk about was the pledge.
The pledge of who would stay in the Republican Party, who would get out. I mean, by your lights, Kasich won. Of course, a lot of people have claimed that they're buried. Bernie Sanders supporters say Sanders is buried this year. Everybody's got complaints. Hadass, is there something in the showmanship of Trump that the media just doesn't have the right breaks or clutch or whatever it is to resist? Or, you know, is it that Trump is articulating something? Ann Curry was said to Nick Kristof here, Ann Curry, who was on the Today Show, Nick in the Times, that the media is just out of touch with the pain people are feeling in this country, working class people, and Trump is speaking to it. The media is missing it.
I definitely think that there's, on one hand, like we said before, Trump is definitely attracting a lot of support. And if the media is kind of in catch-22, if the media ignored Trump and said, well, we have to pay attention to these candidates who are doing very well and they've got these good plans, then people would say, well, you're purposely ignoring the front runner because you don't like him. But there is something to say about other candidates kind of being ignored in a way. You know, for a long time, not a lot of news organizations had reporters dedicated, for example, to Bernie Sanders. And some of them were kind of taken aback when they realized how well he was doing, and they had to kind of adjust their reporters to send somebody to follow Bernie Sanders. There was only a few people, for BuzzFeed is one of them, who had a dedicated reporter from the beginning on Bernie Sanders, and this was a problem. And perhaps it's that the media, as we've seen in recent years, regional papers have really, you know, lost their power. Things are getting concentrated in you know, the big cities in New York, D.C., San Francisco, and maybe there's something to be said about the fact that we don't have as many, you know, local reporters on the ground as perhaps we used to. There are still very good local reporters, and there are still very good local papers, but there might be something there.
Plenty of people complaining, of course, within the field about all this. The CNN town hall meeting in Milwaukee on Tuesday, Anderson Cooper was talking to Senator Ted Cruz about why he chose not to go after Donald Trump in the early stages of the campaign, and Cruz had instead tweeted that Trump was, quote, terrific. Then Cruz just turned it around on the media here.
Look, what I knew is that the media was engaged in a love fest, giving Donald Trump $2 billion in
Sounds
free
like
media.
You were engaged in a love fest,
though. Let's be clear. How many hours of free media does CNN and Fox and every other station, you let him call in and for a year?
Randy in Cordon, Indiana. Randy, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hello, Tom, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been very disappointed on occasions, especially on certain occasions, with the media, by not covering the other candidates, you know, or asking questions in an insulting manner, that really seemed like the person asking the question is out to make themselves look good, you know, or they're letting their own frustrations get the better of them.
But maybe it has to sound a little insulting if you're dealing with somebody who's skirting the facts a lot of the time. I mean, let me pick that up, Randy, if I may, with my guests here. Jeff Greenfield, you know, what about when you've got somebody who's an accomplished media showman, and that's just a fact about Donald Trump. He had a long career. We all saw it in The Apprentice. Is the media responsible to bring a different tone? What blade do you pull out to slice through the showmanship and get to what's really going on?
Well, I think we've seen a couple of recent examples. Charlie Sykes, the conservative radio talk show host in Wisconsin. I think Matthews pushing Trump to go deeper into his point on abortion.
Yep.
Look, we were supposed to have learned from the Joe McCarthy days that he said journalism is not enough. That if somebody is as you asked earlier, if somebody is flatly untruthful, you need to be prepared enough to say respectfully but firmly, Mr. Trump, that's flatly false. Mr. Trump, that didn't happen. Or for any of the candidates, whether it's Sanders' notion of how you provide universal health care or Ted Cruz's notion about how you do taxes, you need preparation. And I think the point about Obama's speech that I do agree with was, if you think there's a debate between whether the world is round or flat, you're not being a good journalist. And that's what wasn't brought to this this whole discussion until relatively recently. I need to point out one other quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
This $2 billion worth of free publicity is a highly misleading statistic, if that's what it is, because it includes even highly critical things about Trump. That measures the total amount of airtime given to Trump. And I wonder if, in fact, the increased unfavorability ratings that Trump is now suffering from is an indication that at some point in the broader electorate, the critical scrutiny is beginning to break through.
It certainly wasn't a great day for him yesterday on the abortion front with Chris Matthews. We're looking at the media's role in the 2016 campaign. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It was Matthews with Trump.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no? As a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years.
I don't know.
Brian Stelter, that was interesting. They were sitting knee to knee on facing chairs, not on a phone from far away where Trump could say, or not here or whatever. And Matthews just really dug in there. He just really went at this. Now everybody says Trump wasn't prepared to talk about this and it's going to hurt him. Is that the kind of setting that's required to get down to it with Mr. Trump?
I don't think it's required, but it definitely helped. And the same was true the night before with Anderson Cooper with the CNN town hall. Two nights in a row, two very tough interviews that were very revealing about Donald Trump. And it required the interviewers to be following up with the candidate. I saw interviews like that, though, in the summer and in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Hadass is onto something with this idea that he wasn't, that the candidate wasn't taken seriously very early on. There was a dismissal of Trump. He was treated as entertainment, and he may have exploited that opening. But at least by the end of the summer and by the fall, there was tough questioning. He, however, is very effective at saying what he wants to say, at walking back when he may have had a gaffe or something we used to call a gaffe. It's hard to know anymore if those sorts of terms apply. Trump saying yes to so many interviews is a key part of this, though. I think it's what we heard from Ted Cruz there, the complaint about how there's so much airtime for Trump. Well, the response from Anderson Cooper was, Cruz, we asked you to come on almost every day and you haven't said yes.
Yeah.
These other candidates, I think, could be learning from Trump's style of always saying yes to interviews. And I think recently we saw that with Hillary Clinton calling into the morning shows on the day of the Brussels attacks. I understand it was very awkward and I thought uncomfortable to have Donald Trump reacting to a terrorist attack just hours after it had happened. But Hillary Clinton and John Kasich did learn from that. They did also call in.
But you can't give anybody a free pass on the facts just because they say yes, just because they're there. Detroit, Jamal is calling. Jamal, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Hey, I just want to say, I think the media is completely fanning the flames. If Trump were not a celebrity, he wouldn't have made it out of the 2015 political season. But what I really want to say is that, Trump originally invested in real estate and his name became known. And then even if he didn't own the building, if his name was on it, it was Trump.
Yeah.
Then he invested in visual real estate on TV with The Apprentice. And so he became known to, people who would otherwise not have known him. Now he's investing in emotional real estate. And that's dangerous because if you know your American history, there have been times throughout our history where you've had lynch mobs formulated off of an emotional fever.
Sure.
And he's tapping into that. And the media is fanning those flames.
Hadass, the danger that acute or, this is a man channeling popular deep discontent or both?
This is a man channeling deep popular discontent, and we've seen it building over the past 10 years or so. The New York Times recently had a kind of a nice autopsy into what's happened in the Republican Party over the last few years. And, it kind of parallels in a way the same reasons why Bernie Sanders is popular, but it's different. One thing I would like to point out, though, is especially in the last 2 months or so, I would say I've never seen such a joining of forces between the conservative right-wing commentators and media and the left-wing liberals commentators and media and how they're treating Donald Trump.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. And enter offer code ONPOINT at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the media's role in the 2016 presidential campaign. Some would call it a circus. You can join us this hour with all of the fisticuffs and taunts and craziness out there. How are you going to make a sober decision? And is the media fulfilling its proper role in helping you do that? With Jeff Greenfield, Hadass Gold of Politico, Brian Stelter from CNN. Just got Brian for a couple more minutes here. Melody in Wichita, Kansas, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say I do agree that the media has been complicit in this. I've watched all the Republican debates. I am a Republican. And I just feel like I don't know why the debates are not handled like a true debate where a candidate is not allowed to interrupt. Why don't they cut Trump's mic? I feel like I have not. If you could hear one of the other candidates string three sentences together in a row, you might begin to understand, oh, here's somebody I could really get behind. But Trump dominates, and I feel like the moderators let him dominate.
Melody, let us take it. Brian Stelter, bring on the rules. Bring on the order. Cut the mic. You know, get this thing straightened up. Can the media impose order on this kind of wild year?
I suppose I saw something different at the debates. I saw Trump falling back at times, almost being a wallflower, letting the others fight. But it is different people have different impressions of this.
Mm-hmm.
It is notable that Trump said he preferred the town hall format earlier this week. He commented to Cooper that he liked this better than a debate. Maybe that's because he got to speak uninterrupted, except when Cooper followed up again and again. And then Kasich got his own hour. Ted Cruz also had his own hour. While we're talking here, Hadass just tweeted out the news that there's another town hall coming this Sunday, a Fox News town hall with Trump. So perhaps Trump is leaning into this format as well. And I would just say it's incumbent on the other candidates to learn from what Trump is doing, from what he is doing. But yes, absolutely. It's critical for the journalists who are talking with Trump, who have this access, to use this access effectively. And I think for the most part they have. But that was one of the president's main messages in this speech this week. I was told one of the points he most wanted to make was that you can't just hand anyone a microphone and then not follow up, not hold the person accountable. Journalism is not handing over the microphone. It's what you do with the microphone.
Brian, here, AG tweets to us, says news and entertainment are no longer separate, and it makes us and our politics dumber.
Hmm.
Is that true? Is that inevitable? Are we in the grip of that?
So much of this is about media literacy, right? Because there is a blurring of the lines between news and entertainment. There are many parties that are responsible for that. There's other blurring that's happening as well between digital news and traditional news, between branded content and news. There's a lot of that kind of blurring happening. And to some extent, Trump has taken advantage of all of the headwinds that are happening in the media industry right now.
And there we sit. What do you see coming for the remaining months of this campaign? Do you think, Brian, and I know I got to let you go in just a minute here, but do you think this is going to get into a more traditional exchange of ideas, proposals, plans, or are we in for this bumpy, bumptious ride all the way to November?
I think what we're watching is something we haven't seen in many decades, which is the collapse of a political party and the recreation of a political party.
GOP.
In essence, Trump has hijacked it. And that is a huge story. As much as Bernie Sanders is also a very big story, and what's happening on the Democratic side with a history-making female candidate is a huge story. Trump and the GOP does right now trump everything else. I think most journalists, whether they work at the New York Times or the Washington Post or NPR or CNN, would say that that's the biggest story right now. but it's incumbent to make sure we're giving attention to the Sanders and the Clintons and the other candidates on the GOP side as well. Yes, Trump is a gigantic story, and we're learning a lot about the American electorate and about a specific part of the electorate through the Trump story. And ultimately, that's the most important part of this, is that we're learning about a group of voters that were not being heard as much before. But through it all, as long as there's hopefully a relatively proportionate amount of coverage for the other candidates, I think the press will be able to come through relatively proud of the coverage. I think, Tom, at the end of all of this, whether it's in November or 4 years from now or 8 years from now, at the end of a second Trump presidency, everyone in the press is going to have to ask themselves, am I proud of the way I covered this one-of-a-kind, explosive candidate? And I think some will come away with regrets, but many will be proud of the coverage.
Everybody's got to pull up their socks here. Brian Stelter, senior media correspondent for CNN, host of CNN's Reliable Sources. Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
A lot of callers here will come to them, but Jeff Greenfield, you've been watching for a long time. It seems to me, in my memory, every time out, every 4 years, at some point comes this self-examination by the press of, are we doing the right thing or not? How different is it this time?
It's going to be radically different because Trump is a radically different candidate who has, as I said before, broken every rule that we thought we understood. You're right. Every 4 years, there's a kind of, I don't know if it's an autopsy or a checkup, and there are earnest conferences about why we didn't cover the issues. But I'll just make one footnote point. We may be about to, in the next couple of months, approach something we have not seen in decades, which is a genuinely contested convention.
Yep.
And the press has been so used to, I had the bad luck to only cover rote formulaic conventions, that now that I'm kind of not in the daily mix, we're going to be seeing the kind of convention I dreamed of when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Is the press going to know how to cover even that? Are we going to have to recruit journalists out of old age homes to say, do you remember 1952? Can you tell us about the Rule 16C at the Republican convention in 1976? You know, with all the cutback in broadcast coverage of conventions, how is the press going to actually cover an event that it has not seen since most of the reporters were too young to vote?
Hadassah Gold, is your crew ready for that? Do we have the old shoe leather political capacity, reporting capacity to get in there and cover that?
I mean, for a lot of us, it's going to be, you know, an introduction to something new, because even, you know, as Jeff was saying, as a lot of our senior reporters have never really dealt with a contested convention like this, where, you know, typically the conventions are dog and pony shows. Everybody knows how it's going to go. And we're starting to prepare for it now. We're talking about doing almost classes within our newsroom to really understand how the process works and these rules that nobody has ever really had to think about before.
And, of course, it won't be like it was, because in addition to the great organs of the press, you've got now Snapchat and Twitter and everything else. No one will control the coverage in the old-fashioned way. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Why is there this fear of Donald Trump? When he started out speaking to the hearts of the concerns of most America, it all started with immigration. They twisted every word that he said. And then they wonder why people are so confused. You know, we could be all working together as fellow Americans.
Which words do you mean, Craig? Which words do you mean, sir?
Free. It is not the role of the media to elect the president. That is the role of the people. When are we going to get this all straight?
What words were twisted, Craig? What do you mean exactly?
What do I mean about what?
What words were twisted, Craig?
Oh, well, it started with the Hispanics and the Mexicans. He was talking about some of the ones that were crossing the border. They were rapists, murderers, drug carriers. He didn't mean all Hispanics and all Mexicans, as the media portrayed it, were that way. But that's what the media did with it, along with everything else they've twisted, like 24-hour media over and over and over again.
Craig, let me just hold that thought. Craig listens to Donald Trump speak. He hears truth as he sees it and doesn't want the media in there parsing and interpreting. Let me just hold that. Avery in Somerville, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Avery.
Hi, Tom. I agreed with pretty much everything everybody said until Craig called. I think just to point, just to respond a little bit to Craig.
Yeah, respond to Craig because I'm interested.
Okay. So Donald Trump did announced plans to deport 11 million people. This is, I think that the major media outlets have done a terrible disservice to everybody by not unequivocally denouncing Donald Trump. This is a Stalin-esque level of cruelty. Deporting 11 million people who are here working are, beyond the fact that they're human beings, the backbone of many of our industries here, which is aside from the fact, but also just the idea. He said this in his speech in Dayton, Ohio, a few weeks ago. He said, if I'm president, I beat ISIS 2 days. 2 days, ISIS is done. We could just blow up the oil fields. I mean, this is somebody with the emotional maturity of a six-year-old. And the fact that journalists haven't come out and unequivocally denounced him and said, nope, we're not going to cover him anymore, is ridiculous.
No.
Avery, I appreciate your call. Jeff Greenfield, you've got two callers back-to-back. One says, back off, butt out. This is for us to decide. The other wants to have him, you know, shut down, cut off, run out of town quick by the press.
Yeah, and they both illustrate kind of a real bind for the media. Obviously, you don't not cover the front-running candidate for the Republican nomination. That's irresponsible journalism. On the other hand, Craig, I must say, I can tell you almost word for word what Donald Trump said in that first speech. He said, Mexico's not sending us our best. They're rapists, and in some cases, and some, I guess, are good people.
Yep.
That's very close to the exact quote. And there's very little twisting of words about that. What I do think is correct is that in a lot of the interviews that I saw, they were process interviews with Trump. How are you going to win? You know, how are you going to do in New Hampshire?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, you know, uniquely, Donald Trump, even grading candidates on a curve, which I've done all my life, has been the perpetrator of some of the most flatly false statements I have ever heard from a candidate left or right.
But if you ask Donald Trump if he's a racist, of course he'll say, no, I you know, lots of Hispanics that I like and know and like me.
Yes, of course. The question isn't that nobody's going to say, except, I guess, for, you know, white supremacists, yes, I'm a racist. Nor do I think Donald Trump, in his heart of heart, believes he's a racist. But when you say what he said about the, you know, what Mexico's sending us, the job of the press is A, report it, and B, note to Donald Trump that the crime rate among immigrants is lower than it is, even among illegal immigrants, than it is among native-born, and say, where are your facts coming from? That's the job of us.
We're looking at the media's role in the 2016 presidential campaign. Forgive me there, Jeff. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sally in Brantford, Connecticut. Sally, you're on.
Hi there. I'm a journalist. I write for a small online newspaper in Brantford, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I've been a journalist for about 40 years. I've never seen anything like this. He's an embarrassment to the field. Because he has created such a clown show, he's grabbed all the attention. And journalists are supposed to be objective, and there's been no objectivity because Trump has just grabbed all the attention. They see him as some sort of media star, and all he's just that's fueled his campaign.
What about the argument that he is surfacing concerns that other people just aren't getting to? You had Ann Curry saying, you know, that the media itself is out of touch. That it lives in a kind of middle-class world that a lot of Americans have lost, and they're really unhappy about it, and Trump has pushed that forward, whether you like his packaging or not, Sally.
Well, so has Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Yes, from another angle. So what? So, but one is fine by you and the other's not, so what?
Yes, well, Bernie Sanders has done it by focusing on the issues. He's more in, he just has a better presentation. He doesn't create riots at his rallies. He has the experience to back what he is saying.
But should the press be adjudicating style here? I don't know. Let me hold that thought and get one more if I may. Thank you, Sally. Nicole in Newport, Rhode Island. Nicole, you're on.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm just listening to your discussion. I just wanted to make a quick point that, you know, I think that the discussion that you're having right now is the media's role in the election. And I feel like at the same time, the platform that you're discussing is one that you're perpetuating yourself right now. I'm sitting here and I want to pull my hair out of my head because I heard, you know, your show coming on. It said about the Bernie Sanders blackout, and all I'm hearing about is Donald Trump. I don't care anymore about Donald Trump. It's sensationalism. Who cares? Let's talk about real issues, real candidates like Bernie Sanders.
There's been a lot of complaints about a Bernie Sanders blackout, and we'll look straight at it. Nicole, I appreciate your call. Here's Sanders himself. He was talking with the Young Turks last week, political commentary program, saying he was asked why he feels the mainstream media says his plans are unrealistic. Listen to his response.
The media is an arm of the ruling class of this country. And they want to talk about everything in the world except the most important issues. Because if you talk about real issues and people get educated on the real issues, you know what happens next? They actually may want to bring about change.
Hadass Gold, what about the allegation blackout on Bernie Sanders? He hasn't been given adequate coverage. And Sanders says because the media is an arm of the ruling class.
I mean, Bernie Sanders has a point in that, like I was saying before, that the media didn't pay as much attention to him as they had in the past, or as they maybe should have because of his success. He has had a lot more success than I think a lot of people were expecting. But there's still, you know, when people look at, for example, like the delegates right now, the media will say, well, I mean, Hillary Clinton is by far leading in delegates. We look at then on the Republican side, Donald Trump is also by far leading by delegates. So those are the people we're going to be paying attention to. You know, in the debate, somebody mentioned this earlier that, you know, they give Donald Trump too much time. I asked the moderators this before some of the debates, saying, how are you going to try to keep it equal? And they're going to say, listen, honestly, we're going to pay more attention to the front runner. So we're going to listen to them. And it becomes this kind of cycle that people complain about, that they're spending too much time talking about the front runner. And then the media says, well, this is the front runner, so we're going to pay attention to him. And, you know, the caller was right that Bernie Sanders presents a lot of the same frustrations that Donald Trump does, but the presentation is much different. And I think for a lot of the media, as we said, it's kind of been how in the world is this certainly like not necessarily presidential acting person leading a party right now? And there's just so many different elements going on right here that it's absolutely fascinating. It's the division of the Republican Party. It's the change in the media environment. And, you know, honestly, how we are surviving as media right now, it's a change in how our society is between the haves and the have-nots. Mm. And it's an incredible moment right now just to witness how this is all going to play out.
Jeff, our time is short. You said in 4 or 8 years, the media is going to do some self reflection, contemplation. That's a long time. We could live in a different country by then. What's your best advice right now for the remainder of this campaign?
Try to be prepared about the facts behind each of these candidates, and also take one step back and realize that the complaints about, for instance, Bernie Sanders' blackout does avoid the fact that Bernie Sanders has managed to outraise Hillary Clinton, build a big movement, make a particular connection with younger voters that I don't think anybody saw coming. And so I think I'm echoing Brian Stelter quickly. Don't overstate the role of the media. There is a political process in this country that sometimes produces results that the media aren't expecting and aren't even causing.
Jeff, we're out of time right there, but I'm so grateful for you spending time with us today. Jeff Greenfield, PBS NewsHour, Daily Beast, Political. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Okay.
Hadass Gold at Political. Thank you, Hadass.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.